The Genesis Communications Network is sponsored by the U.S. Money Reserve, your exclusive source for gold and silver precious metals. Visit them online at usmoneyreserve.com.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
I don't think that's fair. Not after someone else has gone through all that effort.
Mark.
Dr. Carson, what evidence could you point to that would suggest the current polls notwithstanding that Donald Trump would be a strong general election candidate against Hillary Clinton?
Well, he's brought in millions of voters who normally wouldn't be there, and people from the middle and even people from the Democratic side. And these people are enthusiastic voters. And if he becomes the nominee, a lot of the ones who are not supporting him now will recognize that he is the candidate and he is going to be a lot better than somebody who has a completely different philosophy. You must recognize that we're talking about a major divide here. People who feel that America has its original purpose of being a place where people can live and let live according to their wishes versus an America where the government is involved in your life from the birth until death, and they pretty much dictate who you are and what you do. That's a big difference.
Dr. Carson, good morning. Harold Ford. Has Mr. Trump asked your advice on whom he might choose as the running mate, and if so, what advice did you give him?
And the advice that I would generally give is choose somebody who can be extraordinarily helpful to you. You know, in many cases, the vice president has been sort of a figurehead or has been somebody who may be able to bring this state or this group of people. But I think the job has gotten so complex that you do yourself a great favor by picking someone who can take on some major issues and really make a difference.
Dr. Ben Carson, thank you for being on the show this morning.
Well, Dr. Ben Carson, his comments. Scott, what do you think about these polls? I mean, you know, it's one thing, you know, right now when you've got all these polls, you know, trying to understand when you've got so many players. I mean, quite a bit less compared to 17 at one point. But we're down to, you know, three from the Republican, two from the Democrats. And then they always try to do this what if kind of scenarios. And I question, you know, the validity and the accuracy of these polls. Only because you don't know until you know. Well, I mean, if it really is Hillary and Donald Trump, then what is the true divide there?
The other thing is that you may be trying to intend to do an unbiased poll, but I can tell you right now, if you go into Minnesota, you know, you come to Minnesota and you ask people in Minnesota, probably every time, like a Hillary or a Bernie is gonna look like they're crushing against a Trump or something like that. But if you go into a Texas or something like that, you'd probably get a much different thing. So I always wonder what group of people they're asking the question to.
Well, I wonder also how many people are in the closet. You know, they're just saying, you know, they're staying in the closet. They don't want to say Trump because if they say, you know, they say Trump, it's a problem. I mean, look, if you put chalk at Emory College, you're writing Trump and chalk, you're freaking people out. You're causing all kinds of emotional stress, and oh my goodness, it really says where our society is right now. But the fact of the matter is guess what? That society is voting. Pretty scary.
Well, it's going to get scarier. So, I agree with you on that.
Well, it just, you know, again, I just wonder, you know, because like right now, it's not cool. You know, I mean, in some areas, yeah, you can be cool siding with Trump, I guess, if you want to look at it that way. But by and large, if you say you're for Trump, you know, what I often get is people will tell me, say, who are you voting for? Whatever you do, don't tell me it's Trump. So it's kind of like the foregone, you know, conclusion of some people here, you know. But yet I think partly is that I think in their heart of hearts they're thinking, hey, if we got somebody who's not beholden, he's going to turn some tables upside down. Maybe that's what the elites need, and what the bureaucracy deserves is somebody to come in and really turn things upside down. Well, we'll wait and see. It's 5 minutes after the top of the hour.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be The Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom106.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 106.com. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom106.com.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do it.
Bill Martinez Live, a program about current events, our culture, our values, our politics, and our future. And now, Bill Martinez.
We better stop. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. Stop.
Hey, we're back with you, America. 6 minutes after the top of the hour. I am Bill Martinez, and with us right now, Peter Pitts, the former FDA commissioner and current president and co-founder of the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest. Peter Pitts, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you, sir?
Pretty good. Good morning.
Hey, good morning to you. Good to have you with us. I wanted to talk to you about the president's push for more treatment for the opiate abuse epidemic that we hear more about, Peter. Break down the situation. Help us understand what is going on.
Well, there's been a lot of rhetoric lately relative to opioid abuse and heroin, leading to heroin, all sorts of possible solutions, looking for people to blame. And the president's talking about treating people who have the addiction, and that's important. Mm-hmm. But what's more important is to understand where the problem's coming from and addressing it. I mean, think of it this way. Last year, almost a quarter of a billion with a B, non-abuse deterrent opioid tablets were prescribed in this country. That's a lot of pills.
Yes.
And only 8 million pills that have abuse deterrent qualities were given to patients. So that's really upside down. So the issue is, one, you know, why are so many pills prescribed in the first place, and how do we educate doctors to better understand which patients need opioids and which patients can use other treatments? And then secondly, how to make sure that people who get opioids get abuse deterrent opioids to nip the problem in the bud.
Exactly. Well, like any problem, it is comprehensive. In this particular case, you cited, a three-prong attack on this issue, right?
Yeah, but what's really being ignored here is physician education. You know, mm-hmm. So physicians, for example, who see patients who have osteoarthritis, in 50% of those circumstances, when a patient is being diagnosed for the first time with osteoarthritis, the doctor is prescribing an opioid. And there are pills out there that are FDA approved with specific indications for osteoarthritis that are not opioids. Mm-hmm. So why opioid first prescribing? Well, you know, opioids work fast, which patients like. Mm-hmm. Sometimes doctors need to be a little tougher and explain that, you know, the right pill may not be the one that works the quickest, but the one that's most appropriate, safest, and that will work best in the long term. And also, insurance companies love opioids because they're cheap. And that should in no way, shape, or form drive prescribing patterns, but they are. And, you know, payers don't want to, you know, write the check for new abuse-deterrent formulations, and that's a mm-hmm. mistake. I mean, for years, OxyContin was considered kind of the poster child of opioid abuse.
Exactly.
They've now moved to a abuse-deterrent formulation, and it's no longer abuse. It's dropped off the map. So these things really work. But we've all got to kind of get on the opioid issue ecosystem team and do the right thing for patients in the long term.
Well, how are we moving along here in terms of progressing to educate the doctors and to get them to see, the unintended consequences? And of course, you know, we've been talking about this, Peter, on our show, that we are, you know, this is the microwave generation. We want it yesterday, not even today, not tomorrow, but we want, you know, we want the cure yesterday. So opioids fill that immediate bill in this hurry up society that we live in. And so there is that natural inclination, but, you know, doctors have to, as you say, be educated to see that, yes, short term we're answering the problem, but long term we're creating another problem.
That's right. And there are ways to approach it, but that they don't result in immediate solutions to the problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, politicians don't like the answer, well, it's complicated, it's going to take a long time. That doesn't work in a 2 second soundbite. But what really has to happen here is we've got to approach all these things simultaneously. We've got to get better technologies for opioids. That's happening, but it takes time. Innovation isn't cheap or fast. We need better physician education, which is hard coming because doctors obviously don't feel that they even need it. We need better tools to understand which patients who walk in the door might be more prone to abuse and addiction and make sure those people don't get opioids. And then lastly, you know, on the back end, make sure the people that do have these addictions have access to the treatments to get them better.
Exactly. Well, Peter, you know, it seems like the theme of the day has been a breakdown in leadership. I mean, there needs to be a voice like yours, that's breaking through the clutter that can help people understand, you know, what the problem is and to lead them. I always say the difference between, you know, the grief to happiness ratio is leadership. Grief is where we are. Happiness is where we need to be. And that difference is bridged by good leadership who comes in that can be that voice of reason. But it's tough when you've got, pharmaceuticals and not, you know, everybody, I think sometimes we look to the pharmaceuticals as the ultimate boogeyman. I mean, that's part of the process, but you have our own inclination, as you pointed out, to hurry up and, you know, get the problem solved. And, you know, it's more comprehensive than that.
That's exactly right. Also, in a political season, when people are screaming very loud and looking for people to blame rather than looking for allies to help solve the problem. I mean, the Japanese have a very good proverb, which is don't fix the blame, fix the problem.
Yes.
I think that's really crucial in healthcare, and especially crucial in something as intensely personal as opioids, where you have such horrible anecdotes from people that really need to be addressed without throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, and generally when we have issues like this, you know, the problem begins with the man or woman in the mirror. So we need to be educated and understand what it is and not necessarily, I mean, maybe we can help the doctor. I mean, and as you say, be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And of course, when you go in and you've got pain, you know, just get me out of the pain, whatever it takes. Well, then opioids are, you know, they're that quick fix and that quick answer for us. But as you say and pointed out very effectively here, is that in the long run, it may not be the best choice that we could make.
That's right. There are little things that can be done as well, where, for example, not everybody who fills a prescription for an opioid needs 30 pills. Sometimes maybe they need 5 pills or 7 pills. Obviously, you know, part of this whole discussion is you don't want to have the unintended consequence of hurting people that really use opioids effectively and need them for the management of chronic pain. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the kind of the soundbite solutions, take the drugs off the market, you know, bad payers, bad pharmaceutical companies, bad docs, that's all worth, you know, looking into. But at the end of the day, we have to remember that only 5% of opioids prescribed in this country are abused. And so that's a lot of pills prescribed to a lot of people who use them safely and as directed. We can't put policies in place that really attack these people that really are already fighting a very horrible problem with chronic pain.
Well, that's an interesting number, that only 5% abuse. I mean, it goes to show you just how severe that chronic pain is that, hey, look, you know, I need these pills for myself. I'm not going to share them with you, right?
Yes, I mean, obviously, it's, I mean, 5% can be a lot or a little, but 5% of a big number. But I think the message to take away is that, you know, the medicine, there's no such thing as a good medicine or a bad medicine. There's only an appropriate medicine. And medicines all have risks. There's no magic pill. And like you said before, when it comes to the man in the mirror, sometimes we're all looking for a magic pill to solve our problems of pain, of being overweight, of, you know, whatever the issue is. And, you know, medicine is only as effective as, you know, as the safe use it is for the patient. Patients have to understand, which means, again, that doctors have to talk to their patients, and that doesn't happen either.
Well, Peter, as a wrap-up summary here, what's your caution to we the people here? What do we need to do?
Well, when it comes to the issue of opioid addiction and abuse, what we've got to do is realize it's a ecosystem. Lots of people can help solve the problem. And if we're looking for bad guys, we're not going to get there.
Exactly. Peter Pitts, president and co-founder of the Center for Medicine in the Public Interest. Peter, thank you so much for coming on. This is Bill Martinez. We're live at 14 minutes after the top of the hour. Stay right where you are. We've got more coming up right after this.
This report is brought to you by AstraZeneca. Today, nearly 28 million Americans have type 2 diabetes, and another 86 million are at risk for developing it. Dr. Phil McGraw has lived with type 2 diabetes for more than 25 years, and his professional experience as a former practicing clinical psychologist provides him a unique perspective to help people with type 2 diabetes take action and set goals. Dr. Phil McGraw, author and TV host.
While the physical impact of type 2 diabetes is well recognized, many people don't realize the emotional and psychological barriers those who have been diagnosed have to overcome. A 24/7 commitment, solid support system, and the right personal mindset are essential to managing the disease. This can seem overwhelming at first, but if you take the steps necessary to educate yourself, know your habits and change them, and develop a plan with your doctor, it is manageable. Be empowered to stick by your plan, and you will start to see results that will take you to your goal.
For more information and to join the movement, visit www.onitmovement.com.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with principal office in Houston, Texas is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24/7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
Remember Pearl Harbor. Now you can buy, for the first time ever, the 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender solid gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call 1-800-329-6700 right now or go online to usmoneyreserve.com. 1-800-329-6700.
Getting America back on track.
It's a lie!
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Bill Martinez, live.
Hey, we're back with you. 19 minutes after the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here with you. Faith-driven consumer, FDC, represents about 41 million Americans who spend some $2 trillion annually, and they've earned wide recognition for their groundbreaking FaithEqualityIndex.com, FEI, which scores more than 500 major brands for compatibility with the FDC community, and also for its faith-friendly film review. Here to talk with us about their latest survey, and also, you know, talk a little bit about the movies. You know, God's Not Dead 2. Chris Stone is with us. Chris Stone, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you for having me today.
Hey, great to have you on here. God's Not Dead. What was it? Top five this past weekend?
Yeah, it came in. You know, the dust hasn't quite settled yet over the weekend, but it looks like it's a good, solid number four.
Mm-hmm.
Followed closely by Miracles from Heaven, another faith-compatible film at number five. So it was a good weekend for faith-driven consumers at the movies.
Exactly. Miracles from Heaven has done fairly well. I mean, they've hung in there for, you know, what, 19 days, almost 3 weeks here, and holding pretty steady, staying in the top five. You know, Jennifer Garner and company have done
yeah.
a great job with that one. God's Not Dead, of course, everybody after the, you know, at the end of the movie, of course, tweeted again, just like they did with God's Not Dead, the first one. This was quite an interesting follow-up to the first one. We had talked with Paul Kuo on Friday. In fact, we're going to listen to that interview again later on today. And Paul was played the part of Martin in God's Not Dead, the rather inquisitive Martin, you know, asking all the questions, which I thought a lot of people who are asking those same questions about God, you know, and it was pretty timely and very fitting in that movie.
Well, the movie itself is very timely. It is a dramatization, but it's based on a lot of an aggregation of real life events. And we're seeing those real life events play out in the marketplace today as we simply ask American companies to include faith-driven consumers in their rainbow of diversity, and largely they're excluding us. So, you know, sometimes truth is stranger than fiction.
Right. Well, and it's kind of hard to believe, but it's only because it seems fashionable. As your survey indicated, 63% of Americans agree Christians face growing intolerance. 60% agree religious liberty is on the decline. So it's not cool to be Christian or be religious. It's almost more cool to be Muslim than it is to be Christian these days in America.
Well, you know, we've gone from a place of general tolerance for our faith to a place of general intolerance. It is apparent in schools. It's apparent in government activity. It's apparent in the marketplace in general. So as we become a more secularized nation, people look at Christianity and say, well, you know, that's really not appropriate to talk about. That's a private thing. You should keep it to yourself. And we continue to say, if you're going to celebrate diversity, if you're going to celebrate 100% of everyone, then you have to celebrate 100% of me as a faith-driven consumer. And
exactly.
Those that are listening today, you know, can you be who you are? Because that's what defines us. For many of us, for 41 million people, our faith is our primary self-identifying characteristic. It's who we are.
Exactly. It's our worldview, and it's what we use to make make choices, especially when it comes to consuming items, especially if we know that there are certain groups or certain, you know, in this case, you are scoring 500 major brands for compatibility with the faith-driven consumer.
Right now, what we're finding is that American companies have done a phenomenal job of reaching out to many communities. 85% of corporate CEOs globally now say that their formal diversity and inclusion practices are good for their bottom line. But what we have discovered is while they're doing such a good job, they've largely left and excluded faith-driven consumers, and that gap, that glaring gap, is what we're trying to close. So it's, the question we ask is, will you welcome, embrace, and celebrate us equally with other groups? And while we've gotten a lot of people to say, yeah, we'd like to do that, or whatever, they have not taken any measurable steps to do so. And this is after talking with hundreds of companies.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you noted, on one hand, they realize it's good for their bottom line, and maybe that's what needs to talk to them to, you know, to level the playing field. I mean, after all, look what's happening in Hollywood. Don't you find it a bit ironic that we're having more faith-driven movies these days from Hollywood than ever before? And it's for practical reason. They see that this audience is sizable, as you noted, $2 trillion per year spent by the faith-driven consumer. I mean, who doesn't want a part of that pie?
Well, it's a tremendous market segment. It spends a lot of money. That's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
We find a lot of people in Hollywood who are faith-driven consumers, which I think goes to prove that we're everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's a major part of our marketplace, and they're producing content that resonates with faith-driven consumers, and they're being rewarded for it. American brands are a lot slower, and I think that's probably to be expected. Things start with culture, and then they move into the marketplace, and then the dog's tail is the government with regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're seeing that progress through our culture today as we just say, hey, if you're going to talk about equality and diversity, include us in the rainbow. Mm-hmm. It's really the American and now the global way.
It's kind of interesting, Chris, when you look at how our country has evolved here. You got people coming out of the closet and then people shoving people in the closet. You know, is it ironic or what?
Well, we have continued to call people out who choose an either-or path.
Mm-hmm.
People always ask us, and it's particularly they're pitting the LGBT against the faith-driven consumer community, and they're saying, how can we engage both of you? How can we welcome both? And we look at them squarely and say, well, if you believe in an either-or world, you may be right. Mm-hmm. But we propose and we espouse a both-and.
Mm-hmm.
You know, major American corporations deal with all kinds of people, and they need to look at it as a both and, mm-hmm. both our two communities and others. And we've seen examples of one major global company. They have an employee group of faith-driven consumers. They have an employee group of from the LGBT community, and you know they work together.
Mm-hmm.
They work together to promote their company.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible, and we need to get to a broader mindset, a both-and mindset.
Mm-hmm. And this is just a process that we have to go through, isn't it, Chris? I mean, in any kind of, I guess, natural life cycle of marketing, and then you bring in, you know, the culture dynamic into it, it just has to feel its way through. Sometimes can be very slow. I know others from the other side would say it took us so long to get to this point, and now, you know, in a sense, you know, they're in the priority position. And I appreciate what FDC is saying is, look at, you know, let's, you know, we're not trying to exclude anybody, but let's just include everybody.
Well, that's the position that we're taking. We may not all agree on every point,
mm-hmm.
and that's to be expected, but everyone has a voice. And at Faith Driven Consumer, we're the advocate and the voice for faith driven consumers as a community. And those 41 million people, 17% of the population, want to be a vital part of America. The question is, will companies like AT&T and Allstate and Merck and Marriott let us in? That's who we're talking to today. You'll see some press coming out of asking them very specifically and publicly, will you let us in?
Well, Chris, a lot of the faith-driven consumers are getting increasingly frustrated. Do you see more of a visceral response coming around the bend here, you know, where they're finally just going to say, look, at enough of this stuff. You know, it's clear you guys are against us. If you don't want us, then we'll go someplace else.
Well, we try to promote a boycott, excuse me, instead of a boycott. But
uh-huh.
At some point, these companies have said, your people don't make enough noise. So we're calling on our people to make some noise and be heard.
Well, it's time. Chris Stone, founder of Faith-Driven Consumers. Chris Stone, thank you so much for being with us on Bill Martinez Live.
Thousands of Americans are losing weight and feeling better with the 10-2-and-a-chew weight loss system from ILikeTheWayILook.com. Here is U.S. Army Sergeant Dave Myers.
Since I started taking the new phenup, I have lost over 12 pounds. I have a long military career, and it has caused some issues with my knees and my ankles over the years, and I have become accustomed to just being in pain with one of those areas. I can only attribute the way I feel to the new Fina because that's the only thing that's changed in my diet, and I am absolutely pain-free in knees and ankles, and it just feels great to be able to get out and run around and move pain-free again.
The new Fina Collagen Protein Shake is part of the 10-2 and a Chew weight loss system from ILikeTheWayItLook.com. Collagen feeds the joints, hair, and skin. It could help you lose weight, feel better, and look younger. Watch the video on ILikeTheWayItLook.com and get the full story. They even offer free samples. Go to ILikeTheWayItLook.com. ILikeTheWayItLook.com.
Are your Google search results killing you? Unflattering content in blogs, news articles, online reviews, social media, or other sources can jeopardize your reputation, your business, and your livelihood. Let Reputation.com help. Our patented technology will make the truth about you more visible while pushing down unwanted negative content. Improve your Google search results. Call Reputation.com at 1-800-831-0771 for a free consultation. That's 800-831-0771.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.
We use mobile devices right against our bodies every day, but growing scientific evidence has emerged showing serious health risks associated with exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The solution is Defender Shield, the most effective mobile radiation shielding ever developed. Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation from cell phones, tablets, and laptops, and starts at just $64.99. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. For 10% off, use promo code GCN. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in mobile radiation shielding.
Bill Martinez live.
Tell me just what you want me to be. One guess.
Hey, we're back with you, America. 28 minutes before the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here. For more information, BillMartinezLive.com is where you want to go. And you can drop me an email, Bill@BillMartinezLive.com. We come to you now Monday through Friday, 3 hours every day from 9 to noon Eastern Time in over 270 markets across this country and around the world via shortwave as well. Lance LaRusso, who is a leading attorney, former law enforcement officer, and author of the book Peacemaking and When Cops Kill, is with us right now. And let me, before I bring Lance on, let me give you a little bit of the background here, because I want to put this in its proper perspective for you. You know, officer-involved shootings seem to happen almost daily. Investigations are usually handled by the district attorney's office, yet many critics of law enforcement allege that gives preferential treatment to law enforcement officers and also can explain why so few officers are ever prosecuted. Now, the critics say that the district attorney's office should no longer handle the investigation and prosecution of officers who are involved in daily shootings. Well, Lance, let me welcome you first to the show and then ask you what you say about this.
Thank you for having me.
Okay.
You know,
so what is... Go ahead.
It's interesting, you know, people talk about this relationship with the DA and law enforcement officers, and quite frankly, it's just grossly naive. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a gathering, we did some legislation in Georgia this past session, and there was a gathering of 20 DAs, and for various things, whether it was traffic violations, a DUI, or things like that, 19 of those 20 DAs had prosecuted police officers. So, you know, the notion that they're just in bed with each other and they can't look at each other with scrutiny. You know, a district attorney gets elected, they're elected by the majority. So they get elected, they prosecute people they went to high school with, they prosecute people that they went to college with, people that donated to their campaigns at different times.
Yeah.
So, you know, if there's a conflict that comes up, the bar rules address that, and they do call for conflict counsel. But there's another very easy explanation as to why law enforcement officers are cleared in these shootings, and it's something that nobody's talking about.
Mm-hmm. So what? They're innocent? I mean, you know, they finally determined, or well, no, why is it that they're not? Okay.
Well,
go ahead.
Bottom line is when we take officers into the police academy, we train them in the classroom about the laws of the use of deadly force. We train them in scenario training. We put them on the range so they can learn to shoot accurately, and then we train them with live scenarios, whether they're simunition or whether they're just simulated situations, and then we test them on. We evaluate them on shoot, no shoot scenarios on simulators where they're actually firing weapons at the simulator, things like that. And then every year we train them again and we recertify them again. Mm-hmm. So it shouldn't be a surprise when they use deadly force appropriately and according to the law. That's what we're striving for. That should be the goal. I think the reason people assume that they have not is there's a great deal of misinformation about what constitutes a lawful shooting. For instance, you have somebody who's shot in the back, and people say, well, they were shot in the back, it's got to be an unlawful shooting. That's not per se unlawful. And we have other people talk about the number of rounds fired. Well, that had to be unlawful. So we see a very big disconnect, and I see it all the time with clients I represent. We see a very big disconnect between what the law says is a lawful use of force and what somebody in the public thinks. There's a couple of others, but that's essentially the heart of it.
Well, part of the problem, you know, that I see happening as well, Lance, is that, and again, I mean, this seems to be the order of the day, and that is that we're just talking about the temperament of society. You know, something comes down like this, and everybody wants, you know, forget about due process. Let's just go with whatever, you know, the media is jumping to conclusions. They're interjecting their opinion into the matter, and things are running rapid, especially if you get, if there's a racially, you know, perceived problem, that can run a whole nother firestorm that creates and adds to the difficulty of dealing with, you know, and getting down to the bottom of things. So it's almost like no matter what you do with a police-involved shooting of this nature, it's, you know, it's going to be seen as prejudiced.
Right, and this is the reason I wrote the book, When Cops Kill. All the profits go to law enforcement charity. So, yes, I'm out hawking the book, but I'm not making any money off of it. Yeah. But I wrote the book to educate people on what happens after there's a use of force, after there's a shooting with someone killed. There's a full-blown homicide investigation. There's an administrative investigation. Then there's a prosecutorial inquiry. Then if the officer's cleared of all three of those, and they can still be sued. So you have a civil investigation. Then you have the U.S. Attorney's Office and Department of Justice involved. So there's a great deal of scrutiny about these cases. And what people fail to realize is you have about the, according to the FBI, you have about 11 to 12 million arrests per year and on average. So 11 to 12 million arrests per year from these estimates are between 6 and 10 citizen officer contacts per arrest. So if you're looking at 60 to 100 million contacts a year, if you look at that context and you start wondering what percentage of officers use deadly force, well, we know that from the FBI about a third of officers are assaulted every year, but about 1,000 people are shot and killed by the police. So just looking at the arrest numbers, you have 11 to 12 million arrests every year and 1,000 people killed every year. Nobody wants to use deadly force and kill anyone, but this notion that officers are out there killing people, especially that they're targeting black males, just isn't true. Far more white people are shot and killed by police than black males.
Well, now, why is it the percent? Is it just because, you know, the way the media has been treating these things, or why is the perception so prejudiced here, Lance?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. And in When Cops Kill, I coined a term called the informal media. Social media, blogs, all of those groups basically have exacerbated a problem that was always present with the actual professional media sources. People want two things that will not intersect as goals. They want quick answers, and they want a thorough investigation. You can't have both. Mm-hmm. So what happens is the police will put out information, or information is gleaned from bystanders and things like that, and then that becomes, if you will, the facts of the shooting. I'll give you the example of the shooting of Michael Brown.
Yes, exactly.
People said he was shot in the back. He was shot with his hands up in a surrender. The Department of Justice report definitively disproved both of those things.
Mm-hmm.
But that has become so much of the core story. If you stop 100 people on the street and ask them how many times Michael Brown was shot in the back, they'll give you a number, and it never happened. So by the time that story, by the time the truth comes out, by the time the toxicology reports, for instance, that takes about 6 weeks in any shooting. So by the time the tox reports come out, by the time the ballistic reports come out, by the time all the facts have come out, either the public has moved on to something else, or the media has moved on to something else, or the juggernaut is at full speed, and you can't stop it to get these facts in.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly that is the case with Michael Brown. The Michael Brown narrative is so fixed in the minds of people, and then and particularly with Black America, because that gave rise to Black Lives Matter, right?
Exactly. And if you look at, I remember the NFL players and other sports figures and anchors on TV shows putting their hands up. The hands up, don't shoot. Never happened.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, Lance, what is the solution here? I mean, because we've got this growing sentiment, and part of what influences, Black's attitude is this perception that the criminal justice system is highly prejudiced against them.
Well, I think part of the solution is the education as to exactly what the facts are. There was a study done by a University of Cincinnati criminal justice professor, and he looked at UCR reports, which are uniform crime reports. It's a taxonomy to standardize what an armed robbery is in Georgia as opposed to California.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked at that for a 4-year period from 2009, including 2012. And he looked at the number of people who were shot by the police and then the number of Black males who were shot and killed by police. It's very interesting. And these are the facts that need to come out. Because it's terrible somebody walking around thinking the police are targeting them.
Exactly. Well, Lance, we got to have you back to really, drill down deeper into this. And I appreciate you coming on. Lance LaRusso, he's the author of the book When Cops Kill on Bill Martinez Live. It is 19 minutes before the top of the hour. Stay right where you are.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS?
Get on board with the Tax Admiral. Don't take on the IRS alone. I'll cut penalties and reduce your overall tax bill. Sometimes I can even get it zeroed out completely.
We're an A-rated company helping people clean up their mess with the IRS.
If you owe $10,000 or more, then call the Tax Admiral.
Call 800-287-7180. Again, that's 800-287-7180. 800-287-7180.
663 million people around the world lack access to clean drinking water. Women and children often bear the burden of walking hours each day for water, time that could be spent at school or work. Access to clean, safe water transforms lives. This year, Emergency and Charity Water have teamed up to transform communities affected by the global water crisis. With help from Fuller House actress Lori Loughlin, the organizations will work to bring clean water to communities in Ethiopia.
As a mother, the facts about the global water crisis are startling. I'm working with Emergency and Charity Water to ask you to help lift the burden with the 40 pounds challenge. 40 pounds represents the weight of a water-filled jerry can that women and children carry every day to bring water to their families. To participate, upload a picture of yourself to Instagram or Twitter holding anything up to 40 pounds with the hashtag 40 pounds and tag @emergency. For every picture, a donation of $5 will go to funding clean water sources in Ethiopia.
Visit emergencytransforms.com for official challenge rules.
My dad was 59 when he collapsed from a heart attack late last year. Just this past August was when we spread his ashes on the St. Croix River. I loved my dad, but boy was he stubborn. He hadn't been to the doctor in over 25 years. His excuse? He simply couldn't afford it. He wasn't a rich man by any means. At less than $107 per month, LibertyOnCall.org would have been the perfect alternative for my father. Don't wait. Go to LibertyOnCall.org right now for not just your sake, but for the sake of your loved ones. Again, that's LibertyOnCall.org.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
Remember Pearl Harbor. Now you can buy, for the first time ever, the 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender solid gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call 1-800-329-6700 right now or go online to usmoneyreserve.com. 1-800-329-6700.
Have you ever wondered why the medical system prescribes ingredients used in killing small rodents to thin blood? You know, I look at some people on this stuff, and they're more bruised than a boxer in the 12th round of a 10-round fight, you know what I mean? Careful with green vegetables. They must know best. Side effects include bleeding from the gums after you brush your teeth, swelling or pain at an injection site, diarrhea, vomiting, or inability to eat for more than 24 hours, fever, severe bleeding, including heavier than normal menstrual bleeding, red or brown urine, black or bloody stools, severe headache or stomach pain, joint pain, discomfort, or swelling, especially after an injury, vomiting of blood or material that looks like coffee grounds, bruising that develops without an injury, you remember? Well, dizziness or weakness on top of that, and even death or skin tissue or necrosis. Well, here at Bill Martinez Live, we support the structure function of blood with EFA. Plus, find us at BillMartinezLive.com Longevity or call 855-305-8326.
Worried about lead, fluoride, and other contaminants in your drinking water? Get a ProPure with the Pro-1G 2.0 cleanable reusable filter and remove up to 200 contaminants. Drink water the way nature meant it to be. Clean, crisp, and refreshing. See the complete line of ProPure products, including the new ProMax shower filter. There's a ProPure for you. Visit your authorized ProPure dealer for details or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com or 800-544-3533.
Your program, your calls, your opinions. Bill Martinez, live.
So speak life to the dead and darkest night. Speak life when the sun won't shine and you don't know why. Look into the eyes of the brokenhearted. Watch them come alive as soon as you speak hope, you speak love, you speak.
Your program, your calls, your opinions. Bill Martinez, live.
Well, you imagine the difference it would make here in this country, huh? Speaking life, a lot of death words flying around these days. You know, it's just the nature of the competitive environment. You can blame it all on the political campaign if you want to. But really, it's up to us. I mean, we're the ones that set the standard. If we're willing to accept death being spoken into our lives and, you know, involve ourselves with entertainment that promote death over life, is it any wonder America finds itself where it is today? Well, just about 13 minutes before the top of the hour, I'm Bill Martinez. It is time for Bob Welischewski, speaking of which, the life speaker himself, Focus on the Family's director of media and culture. He's director of Focus's Plugged In department, which features the popular Plugged In website, PluggedIn.com. Robert, how you doing, buddy?
Hi, Bill. Happy Monday.
Hey, it is, isn't it, huh? I mean, it's all good fun. God's not dead. Top five, what, came in number three this week there?
It came in at number four.
Oh, number four, okay.
It was right on top of Miracles from Heaven at number five. So in the top 10 most popular films in the nation after this past weekend and how it did at the box office, I'm happy to report that two films are on the faith-based side of the spectrum, which is pretty nice. And in addition, there's two more that are just decent, pretty family-friendly films. Zootopia, which has been out 5 weeks now, but it came in at number two again. Mm-hmm. And My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2 came in at number three, and it's pretty family-friendly. So four out of six is a pretty nice little thing to talk about this morning, because typically if you can find one in the top 10, you kind of go shout hallelujah and right. Do a happy dance, and I'm doing a real happy dance today.
Well, you know, we just had a conversation with Chris Stone with Faith-Driven Consumers, and, I'll tell you, the faith community spends a lot of money, $2 trillion a year, and they're starting to vote with their, with their credit cards and, you know, with their cash. And Hollywood has been responding, and I thought it was quite ironic when you think about all the pressure on religious liberty these days, but Hollywood is, more open to the faith-driven consumer than ever before, it seems.
Well, it's all about dollars and cents, as we know from Hollywood. They would do a film about anything if they thought that they could make a buck on it. And, of course, it goes back to 2004 with the release of The Passion of the Christ that really took Hollywood by surprise, $366 million domestically. And Hollywood, at least at that time, realized there were people out there who go to films that they didn't understand, they didn't know about, they didn't rub shoulders with. They don't know anybody like that they see on an everyday basis, but they believe they were out there. Now, since then, we've been trying to replicate the $366 million for a film, and it has never happened. But we've had a lot of 50, 60, even $90 million. Heaven Is For Real made $90 million. War Room made $60 million. The first Not Dead movie made $60.7 million. So, again, Hollywood goes, well, if you can bring in those kind of numbers, you're still, it may not be 366, but you represent somebody we don't know, and so keep at it. We'll keep funding it if you can keep bringing people into the theater.
Not to mention the fact that $40 to $60 million it generates is mucho profit in there compared to the secular side where they're kind of looking down. Say, oh well, you know, the next one we'll bring it in on the next one.
Well, okay, Batman versus Superman, for instance, number one film in the nation. It cost $250 million to make. It's now made $261 million. Mm-hmm. So, assumedly, it's finally in the black a little bit. Although that $250 million, you often doesn't talk about how much money to market. So that's kind of a mystery. $250 million to make it, but how much to market? So I don't think they're really in the black yet. But you know, Hollywood would much rather spend $250 million and then make $1 billion than spend $4 million and make $7 million. You know, so I get that. But to me, if you make four and if you spend four and you make $7 million, you've still made $3 million, not 3,000, not 300,000, but $3 million. Mm-hmm. That's still a lot of money.
Yeah, I can buy a lot of popcorn. You know, last time I checked,
a lot of.
Hey, what did you think about My Big Fat Wedding 2? I saw it, and except for one part, which became, you know, they didn't become real overt about it, but they had to get a little bit of LGBT in there, huh?
Yeah, and they had a little teeny bit of sleazy dialogue, as you know, having seen it. But instead of using that dialogue to try to coax viewers to think about immorality or something immoral, it was actually to coax the 17-year-old girl to chastity, to be pure. And that was part of the theme of the film, was we want our daughter to be pure. We want her to marry a Greek boy, but we want her to be pure. And so I kind of let it slide a little bit. You've got to put a little bit of dialogue that you pepper it with a little bit, but it's to bring people to think that how important it is to guard and protect oneself. I like that.
Yeah.
So we gave it a 3.5, by the way, which is a pretty decent score. It wasn't a perfect film, as you mentioned, the LGBT theme that was in there as well. We didn't see that in the first one. But actually, I thought this was even a better film than the first one as far as from a family perspective. In the first one, you had the main couple, who are now married and with the 17-year-old daughter, but they had a little bit of a hanky-panky going on before their wedding date, which, you know, was something we had to talk about in the first one. We didn't have that in this second one. So
exactly. Well, other than, you know, the parents were, you know, found out that they weren't married. But that's a whole other story.
But for me, that was a little bit of a Hollywood stretch for me. It was like, okay, they don't have a signature on their wedding certificate, but they've been married. They had a priest do a ceremony. It was everything but, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, for me, I always get a kick out of the Windex. I love it. And I think I asked you about that. I asked you about the Windex, and you go, oh yeah. And the way you made it seem was that maybe it was a cameo, but I mean, opening scene, we get the Windex bottle. Why not, huh?
Well, in the closing scene, if you remember,
right?
I don't want to spoil it, but where the Windex shows up in the very final scene of the movie too. So
yeah, just for fun, you got to have it in there. I mean, obviously it played well, and people related to it, no doubt about it. What else did I want to talk to you? Okay, we talked about Batman.
Batman versus Superman. Yeah, I believe right. you wanted a little bit more of my opinion on the thing.
Right.
So
exactly.
And I'd be happy to discuss it because yes, it has made a boodles and oodles and whatever, but it dropped off a cliff percentage wise compared to what it did opening weekend. And I think that's because people are finally starting to hear from their friends and neighbors about the film. And what you really have here is a very dark, joy-robbing, joy-sucking film that, and I'm just talking personally now, I was 50 minutes into the movie, I did not know how long I'd been sitting there, but I was so hoping that I was toward the end of the film. I hadn't looked at my watch yet. Mm-hmm. It was so long, I just thought, oh, I hope it's 2.5 hours, because it's a 2.5 hour film.
Wow.
I hope it's two, and I looked at my watch and it was at 50 minutes, and I realized I had to endure this torture for well over another hour. For me, it was absolutely, I couldn't stand it.
Mm.
Because Batman and Superman have been heroic figures for me growing up.
Right.
And they've always been good guys that I liked, that I could relate to, that I was, you know, that you were proud to say they were heroic. But these guys, they need counseling. They need therapy. They need to go sit in front of a shrink for days, you know.
Wow.
So I did not like this film at all.
So a lot of young kids growing, you know, they're not going to put a towel around their neck and act like Superman after watching this movie. Huh?
I don't think anybody wants to model either of those guys and wants to be like, you know.
You remember when we were kids?
Yeah.
We acted like we had capes and that kind of deal because of Superman.
Well, I had a little electric track with little cars. I turned one of my cars into a little Batmobile, and then I made little tunnels, and so that I can, my little electric race car set, I could race through the Bat Tunnel. It was my, you know, because I really was a fan of Batman and Superman. No kid should go see this film, and if they did, they're certainly not going to be making their little Bat Tunnels.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, let's talk Kings and Prophets. What's your spill on this?
Well, it's already bit the dust, which is a good thing. Of Kings and Prophets. ABC didn't have the audience that they were hoping, and it's no surprise because they wanted to combine Game of Thrones with a biblical epic like Mark and Roma's AD.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Game of Thrones crowd wasn't happy, and because it wasn't quite sleazy enough for them, although it was incredibly sleazy. Mm-hmm. And those that cared about keeping a biblical epic pure certainly weren't happy either. So you really made no one happy. And so it was no surprise that the ratings were a disaster, and ABC already said, forget it, we're not going to continue on this thing. But I will say it was very, very sleazy. For instance, you had King David, before he's King David, now he's just David.
Mm-hmm.
He's now slept in the first episode. He sleeps with a prostitute, and there's more immoral. I mean, we know he was an immoral with Bathsheba. The Bible tells us, but apparently that was his first and only time. But in this, we've got. I mean, the man's got major problems that the Bible would have pointed out to us had it happened.
Exactly.
And so because it was so incredibly inaccurate, it's no wonder that the faith community goes, nope, I don't think so.
I'd rather not. Yeah, well, let's vote against it. Bob Olszewski, Focus on the Family's Director of Media and Culture. Robert, always good to have you with us.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
75 years ago, America suffered one of the worst moments in American history. The attack on Pearl Harbor. Now you can remember December 7th, 1941, with the purchase of the first ever 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender solid gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call 1-800-490-3200 right now for the official 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve, the only company authorized to distribute these 100% solid gold coins. Remember Pearl Harbor with this limited official gold release. 1-800-490-3200 or online at usmoneyreserve.com.